Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Sunday, March 25th, 2018. This is episode 1474. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by ActiveCampaign. If you have a growing business and you want to acquire more customers, you need ActiveCampaign. Their solution goes beyond marketing automation to get the right type of message to the right person at the right time. And that's magic. For a free trial, go to ActiveCampaign.com/twit. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography, smartphones, smart watches. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number, 888-827-5536. That's the number, toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. If you're from Belgium, that's okay. You can use Skype or some sort of magic technology to call that number. 8888 Ask Leo. Website, techguylabs.com. Techguylabs.com. If you hear something on the show and you're driving around, you don't have time to write it down. Don't even bother. Don't even think of it. Write this down, techguylabs.com, or remember it. And that's where everything is. I talk about all the, we call them show notes, links, discussions. We even put audio and video from the show there after the show's over. And it's free. I don't charge you. I don't want to sign up. I don't want your email address. Keep it. TechGuyLabs.com. Well, we talk about privacy an awful lot these days. And, of course, it's on everybody's mind after the Facebook debacle with Cambridge Analytica. Was it a debacle or debacle? Was it a debacle? I don't, you know, I mean, it's embarrassing for Facebook. Mark Zuckerberg went ahead to go on CNN. Oh, he does not like to do that. He is a very shy fellow. And but he was forced to. He didn't exactly apologize, but, you know, you could tell he felt like, oops, another oops moment for Facebook. Oops. But what exactly did they do? What exactly did they do wrong? I mean, it turns out that all of the information that was taken from Facebook, that's kind of business as usual. In fact, if anything, the only reason Facebook doesn't want companies like Cambridge Analytica to have it is because it's theirs. They can charge you for it. They love the idea, and they're perfectly happy to, and will continue to sell advertisements against everything they know about you. And they know a lot because, not just name, address, phone number, birth date, your cousin's best friend's dog's name, that kind of stuff. They know that. But they know even more valuable stuff because it turns out just liking things on Facebook says a lot about you, a lot more than you might even realize. And they know all that. And so the only thing Facebook was upset about was the fact that a company took it and used it without paying them. That's really the bottom line on that is, no. You need to come to us, and we'll tell you who, you know, likes Hello Kitty, and you can buy those ads then. That's all. It's what we call their business model from day one. So it's not. Now, the thing is, if you are on Facebook, which I think pretty much everybody is, right? Almost everybody is. If you're on Facebook, it's probably, Facebook doesn't exactly say to you, well, we know your deepest, darkest fears, and we will sell ads against those, just so you know. They don't say that. But now you know that's exactly what they do. I mean, people like Zeynep Tufekci, who's a wonderful researcher in this field, she wrote a New York Times piece a couple of months ago when she pointed out that Facebook is, if it knows, for instance, you have an addictive personality from your likes, and it can tell that, believe it or not, it may well advertise stuff to you, gambling sites, football draft sites, may buy ads against you, and Facebook will sell those ads. There's no problem. That's what we do, says Facebook. Just don't take it with you. That's not, you got to come to us to buy those ads. If you, as she pointed out, if you, for instance, suffer from bipolar disease, which many, many people in the United States do, one of the attributes of bipolar is in the mania phase of bipolar, you're very susceptible to overbuying, you know, getting in trouble by overspending, gambling. And so theoretically, Facebook, which can tell, A, that you're bipolar, and B, when you're in your manic phase, might in fact start to advertise particularly expensive things to you at that point because you're vulnerable. Well, now you know that, right? Maybe they didn't tell you that in the disclaimer at the front, but now you know that. And so if anything, I think this is a valuable lesson for us all. I've talked about this many times. If you're a marketer, Facebook's a gold mine for you. One of the things you can do at Facebook, which is really useful, I can't remember the name of it. If you have a mailing list of people who have signed up, you know, for your company, your business, your service, they like you, your fans, people who sign up for you, your mailing list are your biggest fans. So, you know, those are the people we would like more of, that kind of person. You just provide that mailing list to Facebook. They crunch the numbers and they come up with a number of people that are exactly like those people but aren't yet on your mailing list. They can figure out, and they don't, you know, this is their secret sauce. They don't have to tell you how they do that, but I think now we understand a little bit better. They can figure out, oh, you want more people like Leo? Here's 10 more people like Leo. And you can then advertise to those people. It's very effective. It's one of the reasons Facebook and Google, I think it was 80% of all online advertising goes through them now. Facebook went from zero mobile advertising revenue to something like $50 or $60 billion in mobile advertising revenue in just a few years. How do they do that? That's how they do that. Now, the question is, does leaving Facebook help? Well, no, not really. You don't see the ads that Facebook's serving you. But ironically, even if you're not on Facebook, Facebook is creating a profile of you. Because, you know, when you surf around the web and you see those little like buttons, the Facebook like buttons or the login with Facebook buttons, those are keeping track of you. They say, oh, look, Leo just wandered by. They don't know my name because I'm not on Facebook, but they know that thing because they can identify you uniquely. That thing wandered by. And so they are actually creating a dark profile of people who aren't Facebook members. And if you don't use Facebook, well, I bet you use Google. It's pretty hard not to use Google on the internet. Same thing. I think Facebook's more pernicious. I don't think Google who knows what they have. Who knows? That's part of the problem. But I feel like they are not quite as intrusive. In fact, Google announced a while ago, partly because of all of this attention, that they weren't going to scan through your email anymore to find ads. That's interesting. You may see a full-page ad. One of the reasons I'm bringing this up is that today Facebook bought full-page ads in several major U.S. and United Kingdom newspapers. So apologize. I'm sorry. This is great. This is what they do this every time. They do something bad. You can go back through time, and it happens all the time. They do something bad, and then they say, sorry. Yeah, we blew it. We won't do that again. Except that they will, because this is the point to understand about Google and Facebook and any company that makes its money by advertising to you. These online companies. And actually, the truth is, you know, your local radio station, this show, we don't know anything about you. We know very little. I can't tell anything about you because you listen to this show. I really can't. But the nature of the internet is they can tell a lot about you if you go visit via the internet. Facebook's ad said, New York Times, Sunday Telegraph, we have a responsibility to protect your information. If we can't, we don't deserve it. But what they don't say is, protect it from other people. Our responsibility is to our shareholders to keep it to ourselves so that we can sell it. Really, that's the truth. Might as well just understand that. And, you know, It's kind of the way it is in the internet world. What do you think? 8888 Ask Leo is my phone number if you have a thought, a comment, a suggestion. We also help people with problems in technology. Lots of calls for people with problems. If you've got problems, you can call me too. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We will go to the phones, answer your questions, talk high tech. We've got a visit from Johnny Jett, our travel guru, coming up too, as the Tech Guy Show continues right after this. Easter and April Fool's Day. When was the last time Easter was on April Fool's Day?
Never.
Never? Not never.
I can't remember.
Not never. Technology's most dreaded and loved, dreaded, and wanted languages. Well, I know dreaded is JavaScript. Most loved Rust. Yeah, Rust fanatics. Rust is like Arch. They say if you talk to somebody who uses Arch Linux, you'll know within 5 minutes they use Arch Linux. Same with Rust. Look at how high Kotlin is, though. That's really interesting. I know when we were at Google I.O. and they announced, yeah, you can do, well, we're going to let you do Java, Android development with Kotlin now, people cheered. Python, then TypeScript, then Go, Swift, JavaScript, C#, F#. I don't see C++ on this list. Oh, there it is, way down there. That's dreaded. But Visual Basic 6, COBOL, CoffeeScript. People don't like CoffeeScript, huh? That's Twitter's version of TypeScript, right? VB.net. Huh. Most wanted. Python, JavaScript, Go, Kotlin, TypeScript. Well, I guess TypeScript is very popular, according to Stack Overflow. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, Flow. I've seen Flow. And isn't CoffeeScript another idea of kind of JavaScript, the good parts? Strawberry Fields. I know why you're playing this. They named the area near the Dakota apartment building in New York City where John Lennon was shot many, many years ago. They named that Strawberry Fields, and there's a... there's a little memorial to him with the word imagine. Paul McCartney was there yesterday, part of the March for Our Lives yesterday. He said, yeah, a friend of mine was shot near here by a gun. Wow. I knew why you played that, Michael. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, ask Leo the phone number. Who's answering the phones these days? Well, lo and behold, it's the wonderful and talented Kim Schaffer.
Good morning.
Hello, Kim.
Not Easter yet.
Easter's going to be on April Fool's Day.
First time since 1956.
That's when I was born.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Well.
Well, I wasn't alive in that last. So this is the first time in my lifetime and yours mm-hmm. and pretty much everybody's except for other people who are really old, a little older than me, that it's been on April Fool's Day. Does this mean the Easter Bunny plays pranks this year? What does this mean? What does this mean for the world?
I've had it fall on my birthday a couple times.
We must investigate. When was your birthday?
Oh, mine's the 14th of April.
Happy. Well, so we just I got to write this down. So I remember
yeah, it'll
this
be
time.
The last day that you're, what, the second
before
last
we
day
go,
you're
before here? I go on vacation, yeah. Yeah. Well, happy birthday in advance. Happy early birthday. Happy Palm Sunday if you celebrate. And has this slowed down the phones?
No.
I will be here. We'll do the show on Easter, by the way.
Yeah, I'll be here.
It's funny. The boss called and said,
You're not taking the day off? Oh.
Yeah, she was surprised. Are you doing the show on Easter? Yeah.
Yeah, I get those emails, too. It's like,
what are you doing?
Yeah, we are.
What kind of radio host are you?
I think, what is it? Christmas is the only time, really.
Yeah, we don't. We try to take Christmas off. But yeah, no, I didn't even think of it.
Super Bowl Sunday will stop us.
No, nothing shall stop. Neither rain nor sleet nor
Super Bowl.
Tropical nor'easter Toby.
But it's supposed to get up to like 80 degrees this week.
Really? Here?
Yeah, so I'm kind of looking forward to it not being rainy because it's been raining for quite a while.
Burke says when Easter falls on April Fool's Day, you get grapes, not Easter eggs.
Grapes?
I don't know.
Are you
going to
make
true.
Wine?
I don't know if that's true. So you've been answering the phones. I see you've got a full lineup. Should I? I don't know.
Let's
Where go
with
I?
Richard, who
Richard,
has
okay.
been using nothing but a flip phone, looking to upgrade.
Oh,
he wants to know which one would be.
He wants
good
to
for
join
him.
The modern
yeah.
world,
or maybe he doesn't even want to. Maybe he's forced to.
He has to. Thank you very much, Kim Schaffer. Hello, Richard in Tampa, Florida. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Welcome.
Well, thank you much, Leo. I really appreciate it. I'm a longtime listener, and I trust you when it comes to technology. Most of what you talk about, I don't understand, but all I'm looking for is some real good advice on, yes, moving into modern technology.
Wow.
I do not own a computer. I've had a flip phone for the last 10 or 12 years, and I mean, I just hear all about Android iPhones.
This is not even your first. This is not only your first smartphone. It's your first computer, really. Have you ever used a computer at work or anything?
Well, years ago, before I retired, I did. I used a computer at work to be able to program some devices for sale retail.
Okay,
but that was a pretty much a repetitive thing, and after a number of years, I learned how to not get lost on a computer.
Here's the most important question when you're getting, and this is actually the question we used to ask when you're getting your first computer. But I guess it's true really for the phone. Do you have any friends, close friends or relatives, people around you who have smartphones already?
Well, yes, I do. And my carrier for the smartphone, if I'm allowed to mention, is Verizon.
Okay.
I've already looked into checking with the local stores. They do offer free classes for me.
Oh, that's nice. You know, Apple also does that. If you get an iPhone, they have classes at the Apple stores. I don't know if there's an Apple store. I think there is near Tampa. But here's the real thing. The reason I ask about friends is all the advice and support you get from a company pales compared to what a friend can do. You know, you're at lunch and you just say, well, how do I get my calendar? And he says, oh, yeah, you just do that. So it's very when we talked about buying computers, I would always ask that because that's your first line of support is going to be that buddy or that, the sister or the wife, the somebody who knows technology, who's nearby, who you can just say, well, what do I do now? And they can quickly say that. So that's honestly a strong indicator for which kind of phone you should get. Generally, when people ask me their first smartphone, I say get an iPhone. And the reason is it's the dominant platform in the United States. So there are more people who have iPhones than any other. Of the two choices, Android and iOS, iPhone is easily the simplest and the easiest to use. It'll be the least challenging. Android, I'm a big Android fan, and I love my Samsung Galaxy S9 Plus, but that's really a phone. That's kind of a phone for people who like to tweak settings and play with settings and mess with it. And so that's more, I think of that as a more advanced computer, kind of like Windows is for more advanced users than Mac in some respects. You know what I'm saying? So it's nice to have something that's fairly straightforward the first time around. However, iPhones are also the most expensive phones.
Okay.
So if money is an issue, if price is an object, then it's hard to recommend a phone that's going to cost close to $1,000 out of the box for your first. There are some very good Android choices that are down to $400, $300 that probably would be a great choice. So so if price is an object, this is what I would recommend. This is an Android phone, the Motorola G5 Plus. It's a very simple but nice, clean design Android phone that's around $300, $400. I can't remember, but Verizon will let you know. And I think that's a very good choice. There are iPhones that are less expensive. The iPhone SE is actually only $400. And that's not a little more. It's not a bad phone. Maybe it's $500. That's not a bad phone either for your first time. So I think those are the two to choose from. But what you probably want to do is go to that Verizon store and play with them and look at them and see how you feel. See how it feels in your hand. Those would be my two choices, though, for you. The Moto G5 Plus or the iPhone SE. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Line 1 at 8888-ASK-LEO. Actually, we have a couple lines open. This would be a good time to call. 888-827-5536. Rob is on the line from Lolo, Montana. Hello, Rob.
Hi, Leo. You've helped me a number of times before, so we're praying on this one.
All right.
Okay, I have a friend who has two computers and an iPhone. And the two computers took the usual dive, and we're not that technically savvy, so the hell with them. But
throw them away.
Yeah, absolutely. So she went to her little nice iPhone, which is up to date, and decided she would type in what she had, something that she was creating, because she's an author, into the text.
Wow, on a little iPhone, huh?
Yeah.
So I wouldn't want to write a novel on an iPhone.
No.
No.
So anyway, she typed this thing in, and then, like Harry Truman said, I better wait before I send this.
Smart.
And she did.
Smart.
And the next morning...
It wasn't there.
She opened it up. Oh, it was there, but she pushed the space bar, and it went away.
Oh, because it was all selected. Yeah, and she hit space bar, and that replaced everything she had typed... with one letter, space.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, unfortunately, you know, if you did that on a Mac, you'd hit Control Z, Command Z, or you did it on a PC, you'd hit Control Z, and it would all come back. That's the undo button.
Yeah.
But I don't know if there's an undo button on the iPhone.
I haven't seen one yet.
Undo button would be nice, wouldn't it?
Right now, it would be a real blessing.
Yeah, no, it's gone.
Well, her comment was, when I said I think it's gone, was, well, the damn FBI could find it if they wanted
to. Nope, not even the FBI. It's gone, gone.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sorry. That's bad news. Yeah, so this is why you probably shouldn't use an iPhone to write your next novel.
Well, exactly.
or now, what program did she write it in?
The text program.
It was in Messages. She was sending a message.
Right.
Yeah. No, Messages. So there are some situations, if she'd been doing it in the Notes app, for instance, where it might have saved it to the notes in the cloud and it might be recoverable. But it doesn't do that with Messages. Unless she sends it, Messages doesn't save it. It's ephemeral. Yeah. Oh, I'm so sorry. Yeah, this is not a great idea to compose your will, your last will and testament, or anything on an iPhone. I dictate a lot. All right. So here's one possibility. It may be too late, but there is actually this kind of obscure undo. If you make a mistake, like type a space with everything selected, and you'd like to undo this, get ready for this one. Shake it.
Okay.
Shake. Go like this. Shake, shake, shake. Shake, shake, shake. Shake your booty. Shake your iPhone. And then if it's available, and it's the problem is this is a little while since she's done this, you may see a little thing pop up that says undo typing.
Oh.
But I bet you won't. But it's worth a try. And it's okay. A good thing to know for future reference. There's no Command Z. See if it works. There's no. Yeah. I think this is an older trick that may not be in the modern iPhone. I think Shake Now on the iPhone, I think they replaced it. I think Shake Now sends a gives you a chance to send a debug message. Thank Google for that. Google started doing this on Android, where if you got something went wrong and you got really angry, you go, "Oh gosh, darn it!" and you shake your phone, and then a little thing would pop up and say, "I think you had a problem. Would you like me to report it back to Google?" Which I thought was so clever. And now Apple, I think, has replaced the shake to undo with. But she should try it. It depends on how old the iPhone is and whether that's turned on.
It's a 6S plus.
Yeah, I think it might work. Shake it. Anyway, I mean, it's, you know, the thing they do for future reference is you do that immediately. If you go off and you do something else, it's only going to undo the thing you did last time. And you really need to shake it.
Okay.
It sounds like I'm punking you, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. I'll just give it to my dog and say, "Here, Leo, going to give you the phone. Shake it for
me." My wife just texted me. She said, "I just shook my iPhone. It works."
Ah.
And she has an iPhone 10, so I guess it does work on the modern iPhones too. So shake. It may. I'm trying to remember what the circumstances are where you shake. Maybe it's only after a crash that the shake sends a debug message. In any event, tell her to try shaking it, and next time have her shake it. And then the next thing to do is to tell her to get something that will save her work. iPad, maybe. A laptop would be good. It's just nice to have that undo capability. I dictate a lot on the iPhone. That's a nice feature, to be able to talk your words. Because the keyboard, little tiny keyboard. But you have to shake it a little bit hard. Bob in Alpine, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Bob.
Hey. Got a problem.
Yeah. What's the matter? What? What happened?
I got an old Mac.
Yeah.
I got an old Mac.
Yeah.
About 10, 11 years old.
Yeah.
And yesterday it was working perfect, just like it always has. And I put it in the sleep mode, went to do something, came back a few minutes later. And when I hit a key to get it back out of sleep mode,
yeah,
it went bong.
Bong.
And then it went dark.
Well, the bong means it wasn't sleeping. It was off. That's what the bong meant, because you don't get a bong, and as you know, unless the Macintosh is turning itself on. So it was.
Right.
So it sounds like it didn't sleep. It crashed. And now after the bong, is it just staying on a black screen?
Right.
So what you want to do is you want to pick up that Mac and you want to shake it really hard. No, I'm just kidding. You don't have to shake it. Yeah, and so now if a hard drive dies on the Macintosh, it'll go bong, it'll sit for a while, and then you'll get a little Mac with a frown, or you'll get a message saying, I can't find a disk to boot up, or a question mark.
No, it just stays black.
It just stays
black.
So if
I turn it on right now, it'll go...
You're not even getting a sad Mac or a question mark. You're just getting nothing.
It'll go like this. Blinking.
Blink. Oh, that ain't a bong. That's a boop. That means I am really unhappy. You know, that is the sound you do not want to hear on a Macintosh. So
I know. I don't want to.
Yeah, it's a hardware failure of some kind. So there's a couple of things you can try and see if it'll fix it. How old is the Mac?
It's 11 years, but it's got a new hard drive 4 years ago.
Oh. So it just, okay, so that is in PC world, we call it the post codes. On the Mac, it's just called a long beep. Does it repeat, or there's different Mac tones? It's just one long tone?
You mean for the bong?
Yeah.
It stays about 3 seconds.
Yeah.
Bong.
Yeah. Hold on a second. I got a tip for you. Hold on. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, I had to take a break. So, just like on a PC, there are codes. I didn't really know about this. So if there's an issue with a Mac, one tone repeating every 5 seconds means there's no memory. But it's not repeating, right?
It wasn't that.
Nope.
No, it wasn't that.
Three successive tones, boop, 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 then a 5 second pause, then three successive tones means the RAM doesn't pass the data integrity check. One long tone while you hold down the power button, an EFI ROM upgrade is in process. So, but have you let it just sit? Because this is for Mac computers before 2012, which yours is. And you let it just sit and still nothing happens. Is that right?
Right. Right. Nothing happens.
Nothing happens. It doesn't come up even after a few minutes, because if it's doing a firmware upgrade, that takes a little time. That's that long boop. All right, a couple things we can try. One is reset the parameter RAM. This may or may not help.
I did that.
You did that?
I did that.
Command option
yep.
PR?
Yep.
Yeah. So it's old enough that the battery on the motherboard, the backup battery, is dead. That could be related to it. You've already turned it all the way off and all the way on again a couple of times, I'm sure.
Yeah, and I've unplugged it and did the standard stuff.
Yeah.
I also did a command S to safe mode it. That wouldn't do it.
Yeah. Let's see.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. So this is about as bad a message as you could get. Because it means I can't even get to the point where I could check to see if the hard drive has an operating system. It means there's something.
Right. There's no sound or anything. There's no
nothing.
After the bong, you know, yeah. After it starts.
Yeah.
You can't hear anything, tick, 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 or any of that stuff.
Now, there is. The problem is yours is so old. I'm not sure what capabilities it has. On some Macs, I don't know if yours will have this or not, but you can turn it on and hold the D key. D as in dog.
I did that.
The diagnostics, and nothing came up. That's a...
Yep.
Okay, because that's a built-in hardware diagnostics test. That means it can't even run that. So something significant,
right.
Some significant hardware failure has happened. It's not the power supply, or you wouldn't hear a book, I don't think. I think...
See, that's what happens. It goes boop, boop.
And then you hear the regular bong.
Yeah, after the boop, and then bong, and then nothing. Stays black. There's no, in the background, little dinkies or anything. It just stays black and zero.
Yeah.
But the little light is on. That's the only thing. You have a little, you know, round light. It stays on, but...
And you're sure that your monitor's okay, that it's not black?
No. Well,
one of the things, I mean, I'd hate to say, oh, it's broken, and then find out that it's actually on, but the monitor's just off. So let's...
Yeah, it could be just a monitor.
What, is it an iMac? What kind of Mac is it?
It's an iMac.
It's an Integral monitor. The monitor's
one,
built.
You know.
The monitor's built into it. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So the
yeah.
fact that we heard that... Yeah,
I think you. It's a 2006 model. It's one of the first nicer ones.
You have to bring it to the Apple store.
Okay.
It's severe hardware failure of some kind. Although it could be, and I'm hoping it is merely the monitor, in which case that would be a fairly inexpensive thing to fix, relatively. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I spent a little more time with the bonging Mac with Bob. And they're actually, Apple's, much like PCs, have some tones that they'll play if they're in dire straits. One tone repeating every 5 seconds, like the one he played for us, means there's no RAM installed. So maybe if you just put in RAM, it didn't seat right. Or maybe it popped out. Three successive tones and a 5 second pause repeating means the RAM's in there, but it's not passing its test. One long tone, the ROM update is in process. Usually it'll continue on after that. He's getting a boop and then a bong, which I a boop and a bong. That could be the worst thing of all. I don't know what that is. So I think this is usually when a computer, the screen doesn't turn on, nothing happens, but you just get these tones. That's usually the computer saying something's gone wrong so seriously that I can't really do anything except beep at you. It's a hardware failure. Now, the one issue on this, and it's one of the reasons, you know, for a long time, I like the iMacs. I like all-in-ones. That's the idea, is that your screen's built into the computer. But the one issue here is, if this weren't an iMac, if this were just a Mac Mini or, you know, one of the cheese grater Macs where the monitor was a separate component, you could put another monitor on there, or you could test that monitor on another computer just to make sure it's not just the monitor. But with a Mac, it's all in one. There's no way to test the monitor, no way to test the connection, because you'd have to take the whole thing apart. I think this is probably you got to go to the Apple store if you get something like that. You got to, or a repair service. Apple Store is the best if you can find one. A lot of times, even if it's 11 years old, Apple's so surprising. The genius, who is really just the guy behind the counter that fixes things, the genius at an Apple Store has a lot of leeway. Or gal behind the counter often. Usually the one with the most tattoos in the store, I find. I don't know why that is. But that's the one. Those are the ones. They're the smart ones behind the counter. And you go to the genius, and they have a lot of leeway. They can say, I know it's 11 years old, but gosh darn it, I like you. I like the cut of your jib, sir, and I am going to fix this for very little money. Sometimes they do that. Sometimes they don't. Sometimes they say, it'll be $150. This is the worst case scenario. It'll be $150 to look at it. And then we won't charge anything if we can't fix it. But if we can, it'll cost $150 plus whatever we needed to do to fix it. That's more typical, and especially on a much older Mac like that. Or they could just look at you and say, I'm sorry, sir, your computer's dead. And then you would have to just leave in sadness or buy another Mac. 11 years is a long time for a computer. You got a lot of service out of that thing. Beth, Manhattan Beach, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Beth.
Hello.
Hello.
I need to improve the Wi-Fi in my townhome, which is about 1,200 square feet over two floors. And I saw your webcast on the Eero Pro, and that looks like a great option.
I love the Eero. Now, here's the deal. Eero is – your problem is not that it's not so big. It's that it's two floors. And sometimes in modern construction, that ceiling floor is so well made, maybe even has metal in it, that it's impeding the Wi-Fi signal. So do you get any signal upstairs?
Well, so I have the router upstairs
because
I have a home office.
Do you have any signal downstairs?
I get a signal. It's just
not great.
That with my laptop, it's slow. I don't seem to have a problem streaming with Netflix or with my Apple TV or Chromecast or anything else. But my laptop's very slow.
That's interesting. When you so you can stream and watch high def downstairs?
Yes.
So maybe the problem isn't a router. Have you ever done the speed test in your laptop?
I have. It's low, and it's nowhere near what I'm paying for, of course.
Yeah. But it's so it's fast enough for a Roku to watch high def video. You're getting a decent signal. So this is an interesting problem because an Eero wouldn't necessarily – I think an Eero might help, but it's going to cost you a few hundred dollars to find out, isn't it? I can't remember what their return policy is. And I should mention up front that Eero is a sponsor of some of our shows. So I use an Eero at home. We're very happy with the Eero. The way this would work, you wouldn't need a 3-unit Eero. You'd merely need the base station, which would replace your existing router. And then somewhere, you wouldn't really downstairs is going to have the same problem. So you want to maybe in a stairwell somewhere where it's got a little closer access to the base unit. Ideally, what you'd really like is line of sight, but between the base unit, the Eero beacon, which is the second Eero, and then from the beacon to your computer, your laptop. So that's why a stairwell or somewhere where there's an opening between the two floors, if there's a plug, you need a plug socket there. It plugs right into the plug socket. So it actually has a little nightlight. So it actually looks like you got a nightlight there. It's a nice, unobtrusive thing. That would kind of tell you something that would help, I think. But I guess what we want to do is figure out what's going on. When you do a speed test upstairs, when you bring your laptop upstairs, you get a significantly faster test?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, I don't know about a test, but I work upstairs. I was having
it's noticeably faster.
So I moved my router from down to up, and there's no longer a problem.
Ah, but now upstairs is no good.
But now downstairs is no good. I moved it from
down to up.
Either way.
So no matter what you do, if it's not on the same floor as the router, it's about half the speed, would you say?
Maybe. I don't remember the numbers exactly. Yeah. I wouldn't say it's as bad as half. But the Eero that you show on your webcast, the one you're talking about that plugs into the socket, is not what I'm finding online with the Pro version. The Pro version has three units that all have power cables and do not plug into a wall socket.
Yeah, you don't need that. You just need one Pro, which is you're going to replace your existing router. So it'll plug into the cable modem.
Just one beacon. Ah.
Because the beacon, you don't need three. It's too small an area for three. One of the things the Pro might help you with, what router are you using right now? Do you know?
It's through Frontier. I have Fios.
Oh, the Frontier routers are terrible. Okay. So that's part of it, is it's not a great Wi-Fi router. You'll still have the Frontier cable modem, but you won't use it as a Wi-Fi unit. You'll just use it as a cable modem plugged into the Eero. And let the Eero do it. And the reason you might want to do this, I don't know if the Frontier device is tri-band, but 2.4 gigahertz is going to do a better job than 5 gigahertz, but it may be more congested. You're in a townhouse. Your neighbors may have, in fact, in all likelihood, part of the problem is the congestion. You probably see several other Wi-Fi access points you could join, right?
Sure.
Yeah, those are your neighbors. Yeah, and sometimes those will interfere. So one advantage of getting a more modern router like the Eero is it's going to be less susceptible to the congestion problem.
Okay.
So I don't think, you know, truthfully, you have such a small space, that's not the issue. That, you know, each Eero device is about 1,500 square feet. So, but it's really, I think it's getting through the floor is the issue.
Mm-hmm.
And so you'd have to, is there a way that you could put something the kind of midway that would really help? If you can, then I think this would work.
Yes, I have electrical outlets both at the top and at the bottom
Perfect.
Of the stair.
I think that would work.
Okay.
I think that would work. And it is a little more expensive, but there are other benefits to it. Eero is not the only mesh system that does this. Another one to look at might be the Orbi from Netgear, O-R-B-I from Netgear. It's a two-unit solution, so you wouldn't have more, you know, an extra unit. And it's a little faster, a little high speed, a little more powerful. I think the Orbi actually might work better for you in this case.
Okay.
So I would take a look at that. Just go somewhere where you can return it.
Gotcha.
You know, if you say, I need to try this and see if it's going to help me.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that the Orbi would be a good choice for you. The floors are always the tricky part, but in a townhome, also the neighbors' congestion. These are the AKG K240s Studio. K240 Studio. I used to wear the reference models, but these are cheaper. These are like $69. Really, the reason I use them is they're not necessarily... Actually, I think they're very good. I really like them, but they're really comfortable. You'll see a lot of studios that use these because they're just super comfortable. Yeah, if she's got concrete floors with rebar in it, I bet you that's it. It's probably a more modern townhouse. And the metal in the floor is like a Faraday cage. That's why if she can put an Eero in the stairwell, that kind of can go boing, boing. You want the boing, boing. That'll be the best. Might be a good time to mention our new sponsor. I'm very happy to welcome ActiveCampaign to the podcast network. This is a great, if you are doing mailing campaigns, if you have a growing business and you want to keep customers happy, acquire new customers, ActiveCampaign is a great solution. This is much more than marketing automation. You can find out more at activecampaign.com/twit. Don't send blast emails. Send emails that really work. Targeted emails that get the message to the right person at the right time. With their smart tools, ActiveCampaign can dynamically show different content in the messages depending on your contact's information, interactions, social data, and interests. So it's much more personalized. Whether the customers are on your website, browsing their inbox, or out and about on a mobile device, they will see a message tailored to their needs and interests. Design eye-catching campaigns with their drag-and-drop campaign builder. You can maximize engagement with advanced split testing. It's not A-B testing. It's A, B, C, D, E, F, G. They have five versions split testing, which is fantastic, Find the exact content, layout, and settings your subscribers best respond to. You can have multi-user editing. Everybody in the office can work on it. Revision history, integrations, conditional content, geo-tracking, site tracking, social sharing, integration with Google Analytics. It's, of course, optimized for mobile. You get image hosting for free. That's part of the deal. Identify, nurture, convert, and retain more customers. ActiveCampaign. I know a lot of people have switched over to ActiveCampaign. You could, too. Free 14-day trial and free migration. Nice deal. Plus, you get the second month free. Now it's even better at ActiveCampaign.com/twit. You also get two free one-on-ones with their platform consultants that really will help you make the transition and help you get the most out of your campaigns. ActiveCampaign.com/twit. They're already your customers. Make them super customers with ActiveCampaign. ActiveCampaign.com/twit. We thank them so much for their support, and what a great free offer. 2 weeks free, second month free, two free one-on-ones, and free migration. ActiveCampaign.com/twit. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, all that jazz. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. Back to the phones we go at 888-827-5536. Chris in North Carolina. Thanks for hanging on, Chris.
Hey, Leo, how are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
I'm super duper.
Super duper. Yeah.
Super duper, yeah. You and Steve Gibson listen to Security Now every Tuesday.
Thank you. That's our security show, and it's interesting as the world has gotten more and more dangerous. It's gotten more and more popular. It is,
yeah, and
it is
then our, more and more exciting.
Yeah. Wow. The last week with AMD, all the AMD flaws. It's just, you know, it's amazing.
And it's like there's no end.
No end. When Steve and I started that show, and it's 13 years ago now. Steve said, well, there won't be enough material to do this every week, will there? Oh, yes, there will.
Yes. $9.99.
Yeah. He says, I'm retiring after 999 shows. I'm not letting him retire.
Yeah. Nope. Yeah, don't let him go nowhere.
Not going to happen.
I have a quick question about an all-in-one. My sister's looking at the all-in-ones and honestly didn't know that they still a thing.
Yeah. It's hard to believe that people are still buying desktop computers, period, right? Everybody's using laptops or tablets or phones. But yeah, some people still want to sit down at a desk. I do. And use a computer.
Me too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the desktop, especially for just sit down and do stuff. And it's got much more expansion options
exactly.
than your laptop.
So. Although the all-in-ones don't. The all-in-ones kind of are laptops for the desk. Basically, think of it that way. And many of the all-in-ones are designed that way. What does she do with it? What does she want to do with it?
It's going to be general purpose use. So she's hoping for Windows, and she's hoping for something under 800.
Okay.
And I told her to look at Dell.
Yeah, Dell has some all-in-ones. My favorite all-in-ones, my favorite all-in-one is out of her price range. But I do love the Surface Studio from Microsoft because it's a 30-inch gorgeous screen. It's not the super fastest computer ever for the price, which is $3,000. But it is a very beautiful machine. But there is something very close, and it's from HP, believe it or not. For a long time, I didn't like HP because they junked their computers up with a lot of trial wear and stuff like that. But when HP Enterprise split off from the PC division, I think HP took it as an opportunity to really start making, you know, say, let's do a better job. Let's make better stuff. You know, those old pavilions were just junk. But now the Envys and the laptops that they make, the Spectres, I'm very, very impressed with. I think they do very well. And they do have some all-in-ones that are quite nice. I mean, depending on your budget, I would have her. They start as low as $600, so something like the Pavilion All-in-One you can look at. If she's willing to spend a little more, and it really would benefit her too, they have the Envys a little bit more expensive, and then the one I would buy if it were for me, it's $2,000. Is the HP has an Envy curved All-in-One with one of these giant screens that kind of wraps around a little bit. And that is a beautiful, all-in-one. That's probably my favorite Windows all-in-one after the Surface Studio. They're a little bit more powerful as well, but it's a little more out of her price range. So,
Is this i5 or i3 really make a difference?
I would get the i5. I wouldn't go with the i3. The i3, Intel does this. They did it with the Celeron 2. They take a normal, good, perfectly good processor, and they dumb it down so that they can get a low price model out of it. And so the i3 is an i5 where they've taken out cache. They've disabled the cache. And it does make a big difference in performance. On the other hand, she doesn't need an i7. So the i5 is, I think that's really the sweet spot for most users. Most people won't see even a difference in performance between the i5 and i7. You will between the i3 and the i5. I would say get an i5, Intel i5 chip. I would say get 8 gigs of RAM. For her, if you can get more, that's good, but that should be enough. And then she has to decide how much storage she needs. She probably needs less than a terabyte. You only need a lot of storage if you're saving movies or making music, something that takes up a lot of space.
Right. Do these things come with DVD drives?
Not anymore. I mean, they may have a model that does, but really physical media is pretty much gone. Nobody does it anymore.
Yeah. Okay.
You can always, and by the way, don't let that deter you. If she says, I have to have a DVD, you can get a USB DVD drive that she takes out of the drawer, plugs in, uses it when she needs it, puts it back for $50, $40. So having a DVD burner is easy. It's not built in.
Right. That's the way that I go on my laptop. So, and it's pretty simple.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that. Yeah. So. And she'll find people buy these things and they never use them, truthfully. It's one of those things you once in a while you might use to burn a DVD with some data or something like that. But, you know, unless you're making movies, probably not going to use it that often.
I think it's for old photos that she has on disk. She's wanting to copy them over, put them on a hard drive.
Get a hard drive. Get an external hard drive. Yeah. Cheaper, faster. DVDs, you don't want a stack of DVDs. What are you going to do with those?
Plus they go bad after so many years.
Yeah, they go bad. Yeah, get a hard drive. Yeah, just get a big
one. Do you have time for one more quick thing?
Certainly.
Okay, I have a universal USB adapter, and in the past, I'm able to partition off of it and stuff like that. In the past, I've partitioned things with it, and I've taken it over to the other computer, plugged it into a SATA drive, and even plugged it into the same universal adapter. And those partitions it's like it doesn't recognize them anymore. It's a single thing. And I know the data is still there because I have done a reformat and a data recovery. And I know it's still there, but I don't understand why. Maybe the adapter is going bad, something like that. I'm not sure if that's a common error with these universal adapters.
When you say universal adapter, you're talking about something like the newer tech adapter that plugs into a hard drive and turns it into a USB hard drive? Is that what you're talking about?
Right, yeah. And then you can just take it and plug it into a SATA.
Yeah. I use these all the time. You don't want to use it day in, day out, obviously, because it's bare. The drive's naked. And that's embarrassing for the drive, not to mention drafts. But it's very handy if you've got a drive, you take it out of a computer and you want to access it. You can make it basically turns it into a USB drive. No, those should be fine. I don't see it. So it's not seeing the partitions. Is that the issue?
Right. Sometimes I'll format them as XFAT or even FAT.
And it just doesn't see.
Yeah. It's like it was never there. And so I was under the impression, well, maybe I just never did anything with it. Reformatted it, and just in case, I ran a data recovery. Of course, I have backups, but I wanted to see if there was anything on it, and turns out there was, I plugged it in. I can't remember if I went from USB to the actual SATA connector in the computer or vice versa.
That shouldn't make any difference. I mean, the USB interface just basically is the kind of interface you have in the computer that makes it accessible. I don't think that's it. And you're in every case, this is a similar version of Windows. It's a format that Windows can't see, right?
Right. It's always Windows 7.
Windows 7 and XFAT or FAT32 or even FAT16, Windows 7, NTFS, none of those, all of those should be visible.
I haven't had any experience with NTFS. I don't know if it does it with NTFS or not.
Yeah, that's the native file system for Windows now.
Right.
So It shouldn't do this. It does sound like it might be related to this, whatever this device, this USB adapter you're using might be a little flaky. Yeah.
And that's what I'm thinking, because it didn't used to do that.
Yeah, I'm guessing that's what it is.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And if you have one that's in XFAT and you all of a sudden see a warning that says this disk is dirty, have you experienced that before?
I haven't, but it sounds like it's the kind of thing where they're asking for a what would have been a check disk in the old days. I guess check disk could work on XFAT. XFAT is really just an extended, just as the name would imply, fat. So I don't think that that's check disk it. It means there's an inconsistency in the file allocation table. It's looking at it and saying, "Well, you know, this doesn't make sense," and you want to kind of rebuild it. But any, I would use NTFS if you could. It's a better file system, I think, in general, especially since you're only using Windows. See if it works better with that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Let's take a little time out. Gonna imbibe a little coffee, and we'll be back with more of your calls right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number, 888-827-5536. Remember, you don't have to write anything down. You don't have to memorize anything except one thing, the website, because all the stuff that we do on the show goes into our show notes at techguylabs.com, techguylabs.com. Line 4 is James, Chicago. Welcome, James.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. I had a question. I have a Netgear router, and I noticed that you can run a VPN service through the router.
Yeah.
And I was just wondering if there's any benefit to doing that, rather than just getting a VPN service from somewhere else.
Well, for one thing, you already have it. It's free. Generally, when you get VPN, you buy it from somebody, and I should point out that you can never really be sure that the VPN provider you're buying it from is protecting your privacy as they claim to be. So let me explain what this is all about and why you might want to do this. It stands for Virtual Private Network. Many people have experienced these. We first started using these when you were off-site and you wanted to log into the computers at work. And the office would secure it with a VPN. So you'd run a Cisco program or some sort of program on your computer that would log in. And then your computer would actually think it was on the work network. You were at work and you could do everything you could do at work. And then you'd log off. And in that process, it was secure because every bit of the traffic was contained inside an encrypted tunnel, a pipe, and no one could see into it. And it verified your identity and all of that stuff. So this is, it was a great, sensible thing for enterprises, businesses to do because, all your employees aren't necessarily at work all the time and they want to be able to access the work systems. Then somebody thought, you know, this would be really great to protect your privacy if you were at a coffee shop surfing. And we know that, you know, when you're on an open Wi-Fi network, all the other people on that network can see what you're doing, as you can see what they're doing. They even have access to your computer. It's as if, you know, you invited somebody into your home and said, have access to my computers. It's risky. And there are people, I'm sad to say, who will take advantage of that. There are other reasons you might want to use a VPN. One of the ways a VPN works is you're using the VPN on your computer. You're using software, client software, to log into a server somewhere. Your data is encrypted from your computer to that server and only emerges on the public internet at that server, which means you look like you're coming from that server. So let's say you have a great interest in Belgium state TV and you want to watch it, but the Belgians say, well, you can't watch it unless you're in Belgium. Well, you could use a VPN to that was in its physical presence was in Belgium. You would emerge from the VPN in Belgium and it would look to the authorities there that you were in Belgium. And that would, so people use that, for instance, to see the BBC in Britain because the BBC iPlayer won't work if you're not in the UK, things like that. So it does that as well. It doesn't protect your anonymity. And this is important because you come out of the VPN server as you, it's just that your IP address, your local internet address isn't visible, just the server's internet address. But you're still you, so you know, if you go to Amazon, Amazon says, what are you doing in Belgium? But you're still you. You're logging into Amazon as you. So privacy isn't part of VPN to any great degree. In fact, one of the things we found out recently is a couple of, about four of the really big VPN providers were actually leaking your personal IP address. The way they were doing it wasn't protecting your privacy at all. But that's not why most people use a VPN anyway. They use it so that they can get on the internet safely at a hotel, at a coffee shop, anywhere. So normally you'd pay for a VPN service. You'd go to hotspotvpn.com or somewhere like that, or Tunnel Bear and NordVPN, and you'd pay them, and usually not very expensive. Then you use VPN software on your computer. All computers come with it now. You don't have to download any special software to log into their server, and then there you go out to the public internet. But why should you pay for a server if you could run one at home? So the idea of putting these in routers, many routers have it now, is that's your server. So it doesn't change anything when you're at home. But if you're at a coffee shop, you get an encrypted tunnel to your home network, and then you go out to the world from your home network. So it protects you in the coffee shop. One of the reasons people like to use VPNs is they don't want their internet service provider to spy on them. You know, we talk about Facebook and Google spying on you. Your ISP knows far more about you than anybody else. They know everything about you because you go through them. So people have started using VPNs at home to protect themselves. This wouldn't help you there because you're still at home. So it's really only for logging in from outside, either into your home network or into the outside world. You can actually log into that router, use your home network, but also surf from your home network to the outside world. You're going to see this more and more. There are other ways to do this. It's certainly one way to play, at least play with this and see if you like it. I think, Okay. Yeah, I mean, just it's good to know that it's there. You might want, you don't have the issue of, well, I don't know what the VPN provider is doing with my information. Are they logging it? Are they leaking it? Even most VPNs will say, We don't log, we don't keep track, but who knows? And, you know, maybe they're keeping track and giving it to the authorities. Who knows? So having your own VPN server, there's some advantage to that. Google just announced a VPN server that you can use. It's kind of cool. You can set up on Amazon or DigitalOcean or some other service and log in through that. Again, it won't be free. The Google service is free. The software is free. But not the whoever you're paying for access to the internet. So the only truly free solution is to use your own VPN server, and having it on the router makes it a little bit easier. Johnny Jett, travel guru, coming up in just a little bit. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls, too. Stay right here. Johnny Jett.
Leo Laporte, how you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
Good, thank you.
So you got to where you were going.
Yes,
and
I did.
And where in the world is Johnny Jett?
You want to take a guess?
Sure, let's look at I can't tell from the hotel room. They all pretty much look alike.
That
although, wait a minute. Is there a fireplace? It looks... This is
No fireplace.
No fireplace. All right, it looks more European. What is that tall spy? You're in Europe somewhere. Are you out of the country?
Nope.
Where are you?
I'm in Charleston, South Carolina.
Well, that's practically Europe. Charleston, that's beautiful. How fun.
It's cold, and it was rainy this morning, and it's unseasonably cold right now.
Yeah. Well, then, you know, Toby.
I'm glad I brought my jacket.
Hurricane Toby. Let me get that Google VPN thing. Was it called Outline or On? What was it? Can't remember. Online? Outline. That's it. Outline. Let me give you a link here. It's from Jigsaw. So what do you want to talk about?
I got the usual app. I got a website. I even have a travel product.
Nice.
And I can even mention why I'm here. Actually, but before I get you, I'm here for Singapore Airlines.
Oh, nice.
Their brand new 787-10, which is the very first one being launched. Wow. And it's the first time it's being launched. It's completely made here. Well, not completely, because there's parts coming in from Japan and Italy. But it's put together here, and usually they fly the fuselage over to Seattle, but now they're doing it here. And so there's a flight tomorrow to Osaka for an hour and then to Singapore.
Oh, you're going to be in Singapore. Oh, the food in Singapore is so good. That's weird that they fly out of South Carolina, Charles.
Well, because the Boeing plant's here.
Oh, the Boeing plant's. Oh, so you're going to be like on the brand new plane that's never even had commercial travel on it.
No one's ever seen it.
It's a Dreamliner? Is that the Dreamliner?
Yeah, you got it. 787 Dreamliner.
Is it the first? It's not the first Dreamliner in commercial service.
No, it's the first 787-10 series.
Oh, wow.
Which is extended. It's 18 feet longer. But there's a lot of technology on the plane, they haven't shown it to me yet, but the PR guy says, I would love to talk to Leo, do a segment on it. I said, you should get Leo on the plane. Oh. He said, we would love to get you on the plane.
Tell the PR guy.
If you want to go to Singapore or to Frankfurt or Tokyo.
I can't take a junket, but we would very much love to.
All right, I'll put you in touch with them.
Talk about it. Maybe we'll bring cameras on and do video of it. That would be kind of cool to see all the technology.
Yeah, I mean, what's great about it, you know, the plane is, you know, it saves 25% in fuel. So.
Oh, really? Is this the one with the windows that have the?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. Sure.
The windows are like 40% larger than the competition.
Yeah, are they polarized or something? Or.
I don't know if it's polarized.
These aren't the ones that.
You can press a button and they dim. So yeah.
They're polarized or something. Yeah, yeah. Whatever it is. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. 787-10, because there's already the 787-8 and 787-9 out, and so this is the very first one launching.
I didn't know there was a Boeing plant in Charleston.
You know, I forgot there is. It's only been here for a decade, and it's amazing what they've done in a decade. You know, they employ 7,000 people down here.
Oh man. You know what? Have them email me because I would love to do that. We'll do it on the new screensavers. That'd be really fun.
All right, cool. Yeah. I'll make a note.
He's been everywhere, man. He's traveling all over the world and helping us travel better with technology. I'm talking about Johnny Jett. Hey, Johnny Jett.
Hello, Leo.
You're not home. You're in where?
Charleston, South Carolina.
What are you doing there?
The Southeast. You know, a lot of people don't know that there's a Boeing plant here in addition to Everett, Washington. And now tomorrow they're launching the very first 787-10 series, which is 18 feet longer. And it's basically the competitor to the A350-900 series.
So it's one of those giant planes that has a lot of capacity, a lot of passengers.
Not like an A380, but it will hold about 300 and something.
Oh, okay.
Depends how many, how the airlines configure it. And Singapore Airlines is the launch customer for the very first one. And no one's gotten to see the inside yet, including me, but we're going to tomorrow.
Tomorrow. Wow.
Tomorrow.
So this is
a big day.
The launch of the 787-10. It's a Dreamliner, right? Is that what they call it?
It's a Dreamliner, and the windows are bigger. And what's great about flying on a Dreamliner is that, you know, most planes they pressurize it so it's 8,000 feet, but this one they pressurize for 6,000 feet, and so when you get off the plane, you know,
it's more comfortable.
Say you feel like you haven't flown for 20 hours or however long you're flying.
And so you're going to Singapore tomorrow on this thing?
We'll see. They're going, but I'm not sure if I'm going.
What do you mean? How could you not know? This is funny. You know, as a traveling...
This is the way I travel.
We just don't know where he's going to be. It could be anything. You just don't know. You could be going home.
I could be, but I'm not going home.
Okay. You're getting on that plane and you're going somewhere.
So,
nice.
Anyway.
That sounds like fun.
Yeah,
tell us about it next week. I really want to know what it's like. Yeah,
I will. And I just did a tour of the Boeing plant. It's really cool to see how they're made and everything. But
Good to be Johnny Jett.
Yeah. It's good to be.
Yeah, good to be Johnny Jett.
Since you're going away soon, I have an app for you.
Okay.
Because you're going to Japan.
Going to Japan.
So this app is a good time
to go to Korea. Oh, man. It'll be interesting. Lisa says, if war breaks out, we're not going, right? I said, well, I know. It might be kind of fun.
You don't have to worry.
No. War is not going to break out.
No. So the JNTO app, it's a Japan official travel app.
JNTO.
It's iOS and Android. So what's, you know, if you're going
to
Japan.
For Japanese National Tour Organization. Or
right.
Oh, yeah.
Correct. Okay. And I just actually tweeted it, and I also put it in the show notes, at least my post on it. And so
well, you've been to Japan,
it'll,
right? You've been there.
Yeah. Oh, I've been many times. I love Japan. Japan is one of my favorite places. The people are so nice. They're so polite.
Can't
it's so
wait.
Clean, so safe.
Can't wait. I'm really excited. Always wanted to go.
The only thing I don't like about Japan is that my allergies sometimes act up.
Well, now especially, isn't this the cherry blossom season?
I think it is.
It is definitely. Yes.
Cherry blossom season.
Sakura festival. Yes.
But usually when my allergies act up, it's usually in October or November when I'm there. And I was there in a few months ago, and they were not good.
So bring
some kind of Claritin or something.
Yeah. Lisa has allergies. So
but you're not supposed to bring Tylenol into Japan.
Oh, really?
So do your research on what you can and cannot bring in.
So this is the kind of thing the JNTO app would help with, right?
Well, you know, I don't know if they would tell you what you can and cannot bring in. They should if they don't. But you can, you know, anytime you're going on a major trip like you're going on, it's always great to get a good guidebook.
Yes.
And you know, pass the time on the plane.
Yes.
And you'll learn a lot. So, and this will help you with getting around. Because one thing about Japan, a lot of people do not speak English. There's not a lot of, it's not like a lot of the other Asian countries.
Right.
So, but it's great. And you'll have a great time.
So this is an app, JNTO, and you put it on your phone and it has lots of information in the app. Is that the idea?
Correct.
Yeah. I will be getting this right now. That's good. I need that.
It's free.
Yeah.
And it's by the tourism board.
Good.
It's a little clunky, but, you know, there's some good information in there.
Good.
So and for your flight, by the way, I got a my travel product. Someone was telling me about this fan. You can get it on Amazon. Just type in like Arctic Breeze mobile fan. It's $7, and you just plug it in. It's a USB. You just plug it into your laptop or a portable.
There seems like there's plenty of air on a plane.
You know what? Sometimes on long flights to Asia, it depends on where you are in the cabin, because part of the cabin could be freezing cold, and then you go to use the bathroom in the front or the back, and it's boiling
hot.
They
don't mind if you have this attached to your computer?
No, not at all. And this one's really quiet. I bought it.
Mini desktop USB fan with flexible neck.
Okay. Yeah, I was reading a travel blog, and someone was commenting on it. Other people were like, yes, I swear by it. So I was like, I'll buy it, $7.
Really?
And it's, you know, you just plug it right in, and it's, you know, I don't really get hot on planes. I get cold usually. So you always pack a sweatshirt no matter where you're going, by the way.
Yeah.
Including if you're going from LA to Hawaii, always pack I even bring a winter cap just to throw on. Cause especially if you're by the exit row and the window, you're going to freeze no matter where you're going.
Yeah. That's really good advice. Yeah. I think that's true. I guess in general, that's the problem on a plane is you just can't control the environment.
You can't. And they don't want to make it warm, so usually they make it cold.
Right, right.
The virus is down, and who knows what else.
So do you have a little portable heater you use? Carry around a little heater to go with the fan? Yeah. You'll be
set.
That's
my laptop because it gets so hot.
Yeah, actually, put your laptop in your lap.
Yes.
And you'll be ready. All right, good. Well, I'm going to order a few of these fans. That's a good idea. One for
it's
each of us.
I mean, hey.
Why not?
So anyway, and I got a website if we got time for a website.
Sure, let's see.
So this week I was trying to find the seat map. Actually, it was last week when I was flying from Miami to LA on the 777.
I use Seat Tracker, right? Is that the –
Seat Guru,
that's the one.
Seat Guru is the mother of them all.
Yeah, that was the first.
TripAdvisor bought them
a while ago.
Oh. Oh, yeah. They bought them, which is owned by Expedia.
Wait a minute. Now I've got to get this straight. Expedia owns TripAdvisor.
Yeah, but they actually then decided to split apart. They're two separate companies, but I think they still have the same parent. But TripAdvisor,
Barry Diller. He owns everything. It's just Barry Diller owns it.
Barry Diller. No, Steve Kaufman owns TripAdvisor.
Oh, okay. All right. I thought IAC owned everything.
But I remember I used to go to these travel conferences in 2000.
Yeah.
I remember when I started my website in 99, and Steve Kaufman would be at a little table next to me.
Oh, yeah.
Say, hey.
And, yeah.
You know, I remember that's such a dumb idea.
No. And, love TripAdvisor.
Oh, my God. What was I thinking?
Yeah.
I could have been working for them and made $1 billion.
Yeah. Yeah. But so anyway, Seat Guru, you look up your flight.
But I'm not talking about Seat Guru. This one's called SeatLink.
SeatLink.
This is a competitor. They just started out. It's in beta. I kind of like their layout better, but they're not as good as Seat Guru. But it's an alternative.
Are they all using the same data, or do they have their own little thing?
But they're supposed to have their own little thing. But I have a feeling most of them are taking stuff off of Seat Guru.
Just scraping Seat Guru.
Well, they say they're not, but
now is Seat Guru based on riders, flyers that you know their experience?
No, but SeatLink is. Seat Guru is not.
Okay.
So SeatLink is reader reviews and stuff like that, but Seat Guru is not.
All right, let me put in Korean but Air.
Both of them have not updated the American Airlines 777-200 series, and there's four different versions. But you check them all, and they're not like the one I flew the other day, which has been around with this configuration for over a year. So it's like, what are these people thinking?
All right. Man, I've got a lot of stuff to take notes of. You know, as I get closer to these trips, right. I gets more and more insane. So
yeah, well, I'm on this trip right now, and they flew in media from Australia. Wow. These guys had to fly
to
Sydney.
Well,
Singapore, Frankfurt.
Give my regards to Mr. Dreamliner. Have a wonderful trip tomorrow.
Thank you.
Thank you, Johnny. JohnnyJet.com is website. That's where you go to find all this stuff. And probably pictures from the trip tomorrow, too. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Cool. I'm so jealous.
Well.
So let me see I got to see what we're flying on, first of all.
You're flying an A380 if you're flying from. Where are you flying? From San Francisco or L.A.?
San Francisco.
That might be the 777.
It's a 777. ER-300ER version 2.
Okay, well, I love the 777-300. It's one of my favorite planes. ER is extended range. And the first time I went to Boeing was for the 777-300, the very first one, which was Air New Zealand for their delivery flight.
Yeah.
But 777 is a great plane.
So I should then. So I got that. I got that plane in here, and then I need to enter the seat that I'm.
You don't have to put the seat. Just you should put the see what the seat.
I'm just looking at 227 people, and then
that plane's only holding 220.
That's what it says. Oh no, that's the economy class.
Exactly. Yeah.
Ooh. So if you're sitting up front. You can find out. I think we're in business. 42 business and 8 first class. First class has an open suite. Wow.
So we did first class on Korean from Toronto to Seoul. We had business class tickets. They upgraded us because it was our honeymoon. We were the only people in first class out of 8 seats, except the relief pilot would come in and take a nap once in a while. They trade off. Oh, my God. It was awesome.
Aw, snap. This map is still being built.
That's ridiculous. Is this on SeatLink or is this on Seat Guru?
SeatLink.
All right. Forget SeatLink then.
Forget them. Forget them. They're no good. They're still building the map.
There's also a Seat Expert. There's a map called the Seat Expert. But Seat Guru, again, is the big daddy, but they could do some more work on it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, there's no money in this. That's probably why, right?
There's money. I mean, every freaking flyer, Seat Guru is bookmarked.
Yeah, and those people are probably
And every time valuable. Usually when you go into Seat Guru, a pop-up comes up.
Yeah.
All like TripAdvisor's websites, they have a little, you know, pretty annoying pop-up pops up.
Johnny. So what are you going to do for the rest of the day?
I got to go back to the Boeing plant.
I think so.
I'm going to take a nap.
There's a few rivets that need to be tightened.
Yeah.
Get in there and make sure that plane's safe. Got to go in there, tighten all the bolts on the Dreamliner. Got to go through it, make sure everything's tightened down. All the fuel hoses are all attached, that kind of thing. Make sure it's safe. How fun.
They check all that stuff out.
Actually, you should go see Charleston. It's beautiful.
I just had lunch downtown.
Yeah.
I'm going to I'll
it's
be
pretty
here tomorrow
town.
Morning.
Pretty little town.
Great town.
All right. Thank all right. you. See you. Have a great trip tomorrow. Come on, tell me the truth. You're going to Singapore.
I'm going somewhere tomorrow.
Maybe it's too far to go to Singapore.
No, that plane actually – well, the plane stops in Osaka.
Okay.
But only for
– So do I.
Technical stop.
So on the way to Singapore, they fly to Japan and then down to Singapore. That makes sense, yeah, because Singapore is by the equator. Yeah.
See you later.
Have fun. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 88. Ask Leo. That's the phone number to line three. We go Ricardo in Anaheim. Hello, Ricardo.
Yes, good afternoon, Mr. Leo. How are you?
I am well. How are you, Mr. Ricardo?
Very good. I just got a simple question, Mr. Leo. So I just want to know your opinion about the app for Dr. Phone. I just tried to recover all my files from my old iPhones.
Uh-oh.
And, you know, those photos and, I mean, everything.
And they're all gone?
So, but,
They're all gone, huh?
Well,
what happened to your phone? Did it die?
No. Actually, you know, I just change every year the iPhones. So the only thing is I just missed some text messages.
Okay.
And then I just heard about this app, but I just want to know your opinion because I know you're, you know.
I have never used this. I have another app that I prefer. Well, I can't say I prefer because I haven't used it.
Okay.
Dr. Phone is DR Phone.
Yeah.
And the one I've used for years. Now, is this thing, can you turn it on and see it and everything like that? I mean, it's working. Okay. Right?
Yeah. The phone is working and everything. I mean, I just try to, you know, just recover all my
messages. So I prefer a program from Ecamm, Ecamm, called PhoneView.
Okay.
So you can try it for free. It's $30 to buy. I don't know how much Dr. Phone is. Are you on a Mac or a PC?
And a PC.
Oh, that may not work then. I think this is Mac. Oh, yeah, it's Mac only. I've used this for years. PhoneView is really doesn't even have to be for a phone in distress. It's just if you want to see what's on your phone, copy it off, things like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I really like PhoneView, but I think it's Mac only. So you might be stuck with. Now you said it's Dr. Phone is an app, huh?
That's an app. Yeah. So I just heard about this in a magazine. So and they say you know you. Also, you can use for iOS and then for Windows. I mean, for Android.
Yeah, I see. I have an Android version. It's at wondershare.com. So it's drphone.wondershare.com. You know, I don't have any experience with it, Ricardo, but let me ask and see if anybody in the chat room has used it.
Okay.
Transfer data between iOS, Android, and computers. Fix iOS system. Mm-hmm. Root your Android device for free. I've never heard of this. This is interesting.
No?
Yeah.
Yeah. I just see it in a magazine, so that's why, you know, before I just bought it, I just want to know your opinion about it.
How much is it?
I believe it's was it like $100?
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm not sure. You know, I wouldn't buy it until we get some opinions on that. That sounds awfully expensive. And the fact that it's running on the phone is a little weird. You know, these kinds of things are fairly easy to do with Android because Android is a much more open operating system. Apple really doesn't let third-party apps that are made by anybody but Apple, do much. You know, you put app on your iPhone, it can't see data from messages. It can't see data from, you know, other stuff. So I don't know how well this would work. I am... let's say skeptical, especially because they're charging so much. Ecamm's phone views $30. And it makes more sense because you run it on your computer, unfortunately Mac only, you run it on your computer, then connect your iPhone, and it's part of the synchronization process of the iPhone. You have a little more access to what's going on from the computer. No app's going to have access to all the data you want. We're going to ask, page after page of one-star reviews. There's a bad sign. This is, thank you, Scooter X, in our chat room. He's our chat mod. He went to the Play Store, the Google side, the Android version, and he says lots of one-star reviews on this. You might, I know it's not the same program, but you, if they can't do it on Android, they sure as heck can't do it on iPhone. So you might want to read the Android reviews first and see. That's a little nervous-making, especially that price. That really bugs me. It shouldn't be that expensive. Really shouldn't. I can't think of many $100 apps. Can you? I thought a $20 app was expensive. I bought a $20 app the other day. I thought, wow, that's expensive. $100, especially if it doesn't do what they said it to do. And the real problem on iOS, on Android, you at least have 15 minutes to get a refund if it's junk. On iOS, you know, you have to kind of beg for a refund. Let's find some other solutions. Chat room is going to work on it for you. We need a PC version, essentially, of Phone View. Oh, look, iExplorer. Thank you, chat room. iExplorer, iFunbox, iMazing, Walter, CopyTrans, TouchCopy, SharePod, Phone Browse. Looks like there's quite a few of these. We'll put a link in the show notes to a list of alternatives. This is actually a great site, alternative2.net. Alternative2.net. You put in an application like PhoneView, and it'll say, well, here's the other applications that do the same thing, but they run on Windows instead. Yeah, I haven't used it, so I can't say for sure that it's not good, but I'm going to call foul a little bit on Dr. Phone and say, Ricardo, save your money. You're not in an urgent situation. That's the good news, right? The phone's still working. You haven't lost any data. One thing you will want to do right away, though, is connect it to a PC and run iTunes and back up your phone. That's the best thing you can do. Back it up. It might even be the long-term solution to all of this. Back to the phones. Line one is Heather in Missoula, Montana. Hello, Heather.
Hey, Leo. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing okay. I wanted to call you for years, but I'm a geek myself and usually fix my own problems, so this is a good one for you today.
Oh, great.
So I have two Echo devices and three dots.
Two Echoes, and three dots, and a partridge in a pear tree.
Correct. And I like to listen. I've got them set up as a multi-group, the multi-music group.
Mm-hmm.
And up until a couple weeks ago, I had no problems listening to Twit Live.
Oh, they changed the syntax. I'm glad you called. I've been meaning to tell everybody this.
Thank goodness.
Yeah, so the nice thing about Echoes is it's best. The best thing that's ever happened to podcasts, because you can, I mean, of course you can ask for music, but you can also say things like Echo, listen to the Tech Guy, this show. You can say, listen to the Tech Guy, and you'll get the most recent episode. But we also do something which is a live stream. We have audio and video streams of, you know, kind of behind the scenes. As I'm doing the show and all that stuff, you hear all the chatter in the background, me making silly jokes, things like that. But for some reason, Amazon, I don't know why, about a month ago, they changed how you ask for it. It used to be able to say, Echo, listen to Twit Live on TuneIn, and you would hear the live stream. It would just play, and you could leave it running all day, which I hope you do. You are a geek if you do that. But now they've changed the syntax for some reason I don't understand to Echo, listen to TuneIn, Twit Live.
Uh-huh.
And so TuneIn is the app. And I think that they just, something happened that you have to ask for the app first and then what you want to listen to on that app. And that may be true for other podcasts as well. But it's worth a try. If your podcast isn't playing anymore, try putting TuneIn in front of the name. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Isn't that weird? I don't know.
That is weird. Can you repeat?
Yeah.
The new syntax.
So you just kind of reverse the syntax. It's as if you say, Echo, listen to TuneIn, comma, Twit Live.
Okay. Because the behavior I was having is that, you know, I was going through the old syntax and it would say Twit Live on Heather's TuneIn.
I know.
On the Everywhere group. And then Twit Live on TuneIn is currently not available.
Right. So let me try it here. Echo, listen to TuneIn, Twit Live. Let's see if it works.
Twit Live from Leo's TuneIn.
And there it works.
Isn't that weird? I don't know.
Leo, oh my God.
Echo, kind of stop.
The syntax.
Stop.
As if you say, Echo, listen to me.
Now I have to listen to myself. So, yeah, and I don't know why they did it. My guess is, My guess is that they decided that the logic has to be the streamer first and then the content.
Okay. It's interesting. I could play it on one. It just wouldn't play on the group. You know, I could play it on one device, but not.
Oh, it would still work on one, huh? It wouldn't work on any on one even for me anymore. I think they just.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, fingers crossed.
I don't know. So now if you want it on the group, then you have to follow that with on the group name.
On. Right. Exactly.
On everywhere or whatever.
Yeah.
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 That should work. I haven't tried on everywhere with it, but I do that all the time with my Sonos, because you can actually do that with Sonos. You could say, Echo, listen to TuneIn Twit Live on Sonos, and it will do that.
Okay. So. Well, I'm Lady in MT in the chat room, so I'll let you know if it works.
Will you please? Good. Thank you.
Will do.
Thank you. Have a great day, and thanks for listening.
All right. You too.
All right. Okay. Bye, Heather.
Bye-bye.
Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, and all that jazz. 888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number, 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada outside that area. You know, still use Skype and you can call us. 888-ASK-LEO. Website, techguylabs.com. TechGuyLabs.com. Apple's having an event on Tuesday. Kind of a different thing for Apple. It's in Chicago at a high school, at a prep school. And it's an education event. So, of course, Apple doesn't say ahead of time what they're going to announce, and no one really knows. But there's a lot of speculation. Apple's been losing ground in schools because their computers and even their iPads are so dang expensive that schools have turned instead to Chromebooks, which really, for a lot of schools, I think make a lot of sense. It's got a keyboard. It's a laptop. It can, you know, Chromebooks can be $200, $300, $400. They're easier to manage as the IT guy at the school. You're going to have much easier time managing Chromebooks and iPads. You don't need a charging tray that you roll around. I mean, just a lot easier. So Apple's got to do something to shore up that business because they understand when kids, you know, whatever technology kids use when they're young, that's what they're going to bond with, like little baby ducks. And that's what they're going to think of as mama duck as they grow up. And so I don't know if it's true. In fact, I don't think it is true, but it's kind of the accepted wisdom in the big computer companies like Microsoft and Google and Apple. I actually think the truth is that kids.
I found a few locations for Apple near you.
Go away.
The first one is Mac Repair Santa
I'm not
Rosa.
Talking to you. I'm not talking to you, Google. I'm just going to unplug that there. There you go. That won't be talking to me again for a while. Sorry about that. I don't know I guess I said something that made it think. I said the G word. I apologize if I activated your Google Home at your home. In any event, Apple believes that it's important to get, and it's also, I mean, it's a big market. There's a lot of money to be made. But I really think that people who grow up with whatever technology they grow up with, when they get out of school 10, 20 years later, it's all changed. If you went to school and you're in your 20s now and you went to school and at school they had Windows PCs, does that mean you're going to use a Windows PC in your 20s? No. In fact, probably more likely you'll use what you used at home than what you used at school, right? Nowadays, people have computers at home. That's going to be more of an influence. And since technology changes so hugely, I don't think people are baby ducks. I don't think they get imprinted. I think they'll use whatever makes sense 10 years hence. And I think we all know technology changes pretty rapidly. Nevertheless, it's a big business. Apple wants in it. So certainly on Tuesday, they'll announce something for education. We just don't know what. I can give you what the current best guess speculation is. For one thing, they've got a tool we know because we've seen it in the beta releases of the next version of iOS, iOS 11.3. They've got something called ClassKit, which is designed to help schools use iPads for things like testing. The ClassKit framework will let a test administrator say, You could take the test on the iPad, but you can't exit this app. You have to stay in this test app. And if you're going to use iPads for testing, I think that's a pretty important feature. Okay, fine. Remember, they announced iBooks Author many years ago as a way to make textbooks. That's kind of been dying on the shelf. Maybe they'll announce something update there. Mostly what people are interested in is what hardware might Apple announce. Now, remember, they have another event coming up in June, their Worldwide Developers Conference. That'll be an opportunity for them to announce new laptops or maybe even the new Mac Pro, which they've kind of hinted is coming sometime in the future. They certainly need to make a new Mac Pro. They haven't updated that in years. But then again, they haven't updated the Mac Mini in years. They haven't updated the iPad Mini in years. Apple doesn't operate the same way a normal computer company does with yearly updates of their hardware. They sometimes wait 3-4 years before they even make a change. If you were to try to buy a Mac Pro today, I think you still can, you'd be buying 3-4-year-old technology. They haven't updated it at all. They haven't even put new chips in it. It's just the way it is, which is ridiculous. There is some thinking that Apple will change the iPad lineup because the iPad is pretty important, I think, for school, and begin to offer what is currently just called the iPad. They have the iPad Mini, the iPad, and the iPad Pro. They'll modify the iPad to be less expensive. They need to get it down. The education price for the least expensive iPad right now is $299. They need to get it down at least that low. And more importantly, we think because the invitation had calligraphy on it, that they'll be offering the Apple Pencil, which is currently only available for the more expensive iPad Pros, for the less expensive iPads. Yeah, that would make sense. So a pencil, maybe a new low-cost iPad. Here's what everybody's really interested in. Are you going to update the MacBook Air? This is something that people use it, love it. Until the MacBook, which is thinner and lighter, came out, the MacBook Air was the thin, light Mac. It's $999. It's also fairly inexpensive for a Macintosh. It has connectors, schools like that, like USB ports. A MacBook doesn't. It just has that Type-C connector. It has USB ports and all the kinds of connectors. So you don't have to have, you don't want to give students dongles. They'll lose them. So, and the MacBook Air is thin. It's light. Students like that. The problem is the screen's out of date. The processor's out of date. If they were to update it with a more modern Retina display and maybe a more modern processor and still offer it at under $1,000, one of the rumor experts, Ming-Chi Kuo, who is an analyst at KGI Securities, says there will be around $800, $900 MacBook Air. I'd welcome that. I might even buy that. I like the MacBook. That was the thin wedge-shaped one. When Steve Jobs showed it off. That's how old it is. When it came out, when Steve Jobs was still alive, he showed it off. He had it in a manila envelope. Remember that? It was so thin that it'll fit in a manila envelope. It'll be very interesting to see what happens on Tuesday. We'll be watching. Apple, I don't think that they said the language on the website implies they're not going to stream it. So you can't watch a live stream of it. You'll just have to watch the blogs and so forth. They said something like, you'll be able to watch it after it's over. So you can download it from the Apple site. We'll cover it next week. We'll cover it next week. I would, my wish list would be to see a less expensive iPad Pro. I'd love to see updated iPads in general, but more to my taste, the new Mac, a newer MacBook Air would be really nice. Or maybe a decent keyboard on the MacBook. That would be really nice. Terrible keyboards. But I don't think I'm going to get any of my wishes. I really I don't really count. Most people agree that Apple doesn't care about the Mac, that the Mac isn't the future of Apple, that Apple sees iOS, their mobile operating system, the one that's on the iPhone and the iPad, that's the future. And in the next few years, and I think this is probably true, we will see an iOS device that really is to replace the Macintosh with a keyboard, with more capabilities, perhaps. I mean, one of the reasons you need a Mac is to write software for iOS. If you could write software on iOS for iOS, that would be a nice thing. So those things will happen the next couple of years. And at that point, I'm sad. I'm very sad to say I think the Macintosh will start to disappear. the way of the world. Things change. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Back to the phones we go. What do you think Apple might do on Tuesday? What do you? What, more importantly, what would you like Apple to do on Tuesday? Let's talk. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number, and we're going to talk high tech.
Hey, thank you.
I just plugged my Google Home back in. Now maybe it'll just not. Shh, quiet.
The mic is muted.
Oh, thanks. Anything else I can do for you? 8888 Ask Leo. We go back to the phones. We're surrounded by things that talk to me now. Erwin's on the line from the Bronx. Hello, Erwin.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm great. How's things going in the Bronx?
Everything is fine. Thank you. By the way, the last tip that you gave me worked fine. It really was great.
But oh, I got good. Okay.
Another question about this.
I'm full of tips.
I know. My wife has Parkinson's.
Okay.
And it's kind of getting a little severe, and she likes to use the PC, does a lot of writing and things like that.
Yeah, I'm sorry. That's so tough.
Yeah, I know. I've Googled around all over the place looking for mice, voice-activated devices, things like that. And there's all kinds of stuff, running something from like a device, a piece of software that claims that if you use it right, it will kind of like ameliorate the shaking and only go for certain movements and disregard other movements and so on and so forth. And all the way up to something where you can use your eyes to get...
Yeah, yeah.
It was getting to the point where I thought, well, maybe wait a minute. You know, like, unfortunately, Stephen Hawking just passed away. But the point was, I've seen, like, his wheelchair and setup.
Yep.
I said, oh, my God, in heaven, you go from this to all the way to that.
He had a little help from IBM and others. I mean, he had the state of the art.
Yeah, I know.
Can she type at all, or is it just the mouse, or is typing an issue as well?
The typing is an issue as well, okay. And we've got Greg into that.
Yeah, so she can dictate once the dictation's launched.
Right. It's just, let's say if she wants to get to an email.
Yeah, it's hard to get that pointer to get to where she wants it to be.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's the whole problem. And so I was kind of wondering, do you have any resources or know of any resources or any places that I could start looking into? And, you know, I'm not bad at researching things myself, you know?
Yeah, I don't off the top of my head. There, you know, there's the Independent Living Resource Center. I don't know if that's just a local thing or you have something like that in New York, but there's always somewhere, you know, yeah, this is a San Francisco ILRCSF, but I'm sure there's somewhere in New York that's very similar. And the idea is that what we call this accessibility technology, the idea that anybody should be able to access computer technology no matter what limitations they might have. So it's called accessibility. And places like the Independent Living Resource Center are devoted to helping people. The reason is there are many different needs. So some people need an eye, you know, pointing device, and you certainly can get eye tracking devices. Some people, a foot pedal would work, and there are foot driven mice. I don't know if her feet are a little bit more steady than her hands.
That never even occurred to me.
Yeah, there are absolutely many people, in fact, use for varieties of reasons, including carpal tunnel, use foot pedals. You can, of course, in Windows, it's getting – Microsoft, by the way, is highly committed to accessibility, as is Apple. And both companies have done, I think, bang-up jobs of making their stuff more accessible. Kudos to both. You can use Cortana, the voice assistant on Windows, to launch programs. So she could sit down at the computer, say, hey, Cortana, open Dragon Naturally Speaking, and start dictating right away. Windows 10 has some accessibility voice commands as well. Dan is telling me that if you say mouse grid, you can click anywhere by saying a grid point. So it's more laborious, but I think many of these accessibility techniques are more laborious, but at least you can do it, right? And that's the point.
The thing is, I think you just solve a problem by saying the magic word, Cortina.
And yeah,
that's yeah.
A lot of us don't use it. It's built into all modern versions of Windows. I think Windows 10 Cortana's integration is very powerful. But, you know, you got to remember to talk to your computer. And if you can easily use the mouse and keyboard, I think most of the time we forget. But for her, Cortana might be huge.
Yeah. That sounds. That's another thing I never thought of. You know.
Yeah.
Thanks for the tip.
You're welcome.
Okay, so you put this in show notes, don't
you? Yeah, absolutely. I don't. James DeRuvo's listening as we speak, and sometimes he has band practices and other things, and so sometimes it doesn't get in there right away, but it'll be in the next day or so. And, of course, if you hit the Windows key and you go to accessibility, you can see all of the accessibility features that Windows has. I guess, they call it ease of access. Actually, that's a better word than ease of access. And you'll see that there are audio options, that there are ways to use the mouse that don't require a mouse. There's something called mouse keys. You can use a numeric keyboard
or
keypad to move it around. So I would just play with it. Again, places like the Independent Living Resource Center are great because they have experts on all of this stuff. And so they're very good at it and much better than I ever would be. But there's some places you can look. And yeah, don't forget Cortana. She's kind of amazing. She can do a whole lot of stuff now.
Yeah, that's something that really would. Well, the thing I'll have to do is we've got a several-year-old HP laptop.
She's got to go to Windows 10 if you can, yeah.
Yeah, right, exactly. So I'm not. I just got the serial number off of this thing. So I'm not sure if I can download or I'll just simply go out and buy Windows
10. Here's the really good news. If you have Windows 7, do you have Windows 7?
Yes.
Microsoft offers a free upgrade to Windows 10 for people with disabilities. And they don't really, you don't have to prove it. You just say, I want the free upgrade. I have a disability, and they'll upgrade you. I think they still offer that. So we'll put a link in the show notes to the page that does that. Free upgrade to Windows 10. That's continuing on, as far as I know, for people who use assistive technologies. So let's see.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks again for all your help.
Yeah, it's Microsoft.com/accessibility/Windows. Yeah, give that a shot. I think my pleasure. And I'm sorry that your wife is suffering, but good luck. You know, I have a friend, a very well-known radio host in San Francisco with Parkinson's. And I think it's public knowledge. Ron Owens at KGO in San Francisco had Parkinson's, and he had an implant in his brain that was amazingly successful in stopping the tremors. Technology moves in all sorts of directions. We've seen cochlear implants that could bring hearing back to people who've been deaf since birth. These implants that can actually control Parkinson's tremors, and they really work. It's kind of remarkable. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls coming up. Cortana, fine Corinthian leather. Still trying to get that Twit live stream working on the Echo group. Oh, it expired, darn it. Well, it's worth buying the upgrade because 10 really does have a lot of great stuff. That's too bad that they expired that. You know, I think part of the problem is, sad to say, a lot of people were using it who didn't have any disability. They just wanted a free upgrade. Oh, it does work, says PC Guy 88. All right. Well, there seems to be some differing of opinions. No, yeah, it says it expired. Oh, alas, alas. End of the year. We just missed it by a few months. R-E-S-P-E-C-T to Michael Cozio, our musical director. He does a great job spinning the discs. To Kim Schaffer for answering the phones. We're going to keep the phones going, by the way. Show ends at 2 this afternoon, but my time. But I will keep going for another 45 minutes. So in about half an hour, we'll wrap up the show. I'm sorry to say, but the lines will remain open for another hour. So 45 minutes to an hour. So please keep it going. If you're on the line, I promise we'll get to everyone on the line and then some. 888-827-5536. If you have trouble getting in during the show, which is not unusual, here's your chance to get in during a pre-record for future episodes. You can ask the question today and you'll hear your answer on April 20th. Fair enough, right? Chuck, San Diego, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Chuck.
Good afternoon, Leo, sir. How are you?
I am well. How are you, sir?
I'm quite well, thanks. So I'm a salesman, and the company that I do business with is now, when we close a transaction, is requiring that text messages with that particular client be uploaded to their server. So I use an iPhone, and I use a Windows computer, and I'm trying to figure out the options to where I can see those text messages on my computer so I can convert them to PDFs and upload them from there.
So they want a record of the interaction you had with the client.
Precisely.
Got it. You can do it on your phone directly, probably, right?
Well, they need to be in PDF form.
Yeah. Okay, they require PDF. I wonder how other people are doing it. I mean, is it more than one page of text messages? Is it a bunch of content?
Generally several pages, and that appears to be what my colleagues are doing. Some that use Google Voice can pull it up from the computer on Google Voice.
That's right, yeah.
But those of us that don't...
Using Apple's Messages program, is that what you're using?
Yes,
All right, well, if you're on a Mac, that's easy. And you're not. That's the problem. If you're on a Mac, this is Apple, though. Apple works beautifully as long as you don't try to use anything that they don't make. So on a Mac, you just open Messages on the Mac, and you can, there you have it, the whole thing. You can copy and paste it. I guess one thing you could do is copy and paste it from the phone to an email and mail it out to yourself and then turn it into a PDF.
Here's the problem with doing that. I've attempted that previously. The problem is that you lose the date and time stamps when you do that.
Ah, so you need that complete record.
Yes.
Well, one way to do this is to, and it may be to your advantage to do this anyway, is to set up a Google Voice number, which you can use on your iPhone for those transactions. That way, by the way, you have a different number, a unique number for interacting with your customers. And then because you're using Google Voice, you can use Hangouts to do the text messaging, and then that'll run on the desktop as well, and you can have the Hangouts.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's a phone number with, you know, a 10-year trail of clients.
You don't want to,
that's the rub.
Well, look at this. Somebody in the chat room. Tony, Tony to the rescue. He's in our chat room. He's got an article that he's got from copytrans.net, how to back up iPhone messages to PDF. Wow. Steps below. Copy. Oh, you need a program. Okay. So it's called, we'll put this in the show notes, the link to it. The program is called CopyTrans Contacts. You need the program, it looks like, on your Windows machine. And then install the program and then start the program and then connect the iPhone. Ah, this looks good. So this is a program. It's kind of like what we were talking about earlier where I think it was Ricardo wanted to save stuff from his iPhone to his Windows PC. This is a Windows program that will copy, and it looks like it gets the timestamps too. They'll actually get the entire transcript of the message, and then you can do whatever you want with it, including save it out to PDF.
Can you repeat the name of it?
Yeah, Copy Trans is the program. CopyTrans.net. And the program, the particular program you want, the idea is transfer iPod to computer, copy iPhones to iTunes. The idea, one you want particularly, is CopyTrans Contacts, it sounds like. Keep control, keep your iPhone contacts safe, because it sounds like it will also get your messages. Anyway, it'd be worth checking out that program on the site. It looks like they have a free trial. They have
a
whole bunch of, Copy Trans Manager, easily manage iPhone without iTunes. Oh, this looks great. I haven't tried this, but it does look pretty cool. There's also apparently a iOS app, according to Mike B, that will do this. It's called Messages and SMS Export to PDF. Well, this might even be more convenient. So you could do this directly on the iPhone and take the entire transcript. Look at that. It's free. It has in-app purchases. It's from Digiset, D-I-G-I-S-E-T. Go to the App Store and search for Messages and SMS Export to PDF.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Look at that. Well, thank the chat room. They're smart. So there's two different solutions, one that will work on Windows, but one you don't even need to exit. I'm surprised, actually. Let me I'm going to set that up, and I'll get back to you before the show's over. I'll install it during the next break. Because that would be very handy, wouldn't it? Lots of people would love a way to keep track of their messages and keep them forever. I know people. We get people from time to time say, you know, my husband passed away and I've got these messages from him. I'd love to save them. Is there any way to get that? Actually, if you'd search for messages and SMS export to PDF, there's more than one. SMS export to chat or PDF, messages and SMS export messages. There's more than one of these. Guess it's not hard to do. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. Russell, Desert Hot Springs, California. Hi, Russell. Welcome.
Good. Hi, Leo. Thrilled to speak to you. I have you on about every Saturday or Sunday when we're doing something around the house. It's good to talk to you.
Thank you for listening. I really appreciate that.
So today I had my Android phone tethered to my computer, downloading some pictures because my phone was out of space.
Yeah.
And for some reason, I accidentally deleted a bunch of them.
Oh, no.
And I don't know where they went or how to get them back.
They're not on your computer and they're not on your phone.
No, I had them highlighted. I hit delete, which I thought was just the ones that are already transferred over to clear them out of the phone. And for some reason, it deleted the entire photo folder.
Oh, yeah.
And I had some stuff on there I really wanted.
So the question, I guess, is how do we undelete photos that have been deleted?
Yes, that's the question. I don't know if I got to go to some super phone tech guru.
What kind of Android phone is it?
I have the Samsung Note 5.
Okay, nice phone.
Yeah, they're great.
Now, and this is before they got copied over, unfortunately, right? This was
actually 1,200 of them got copied over, but it was the other gazillion that were still left.
You did it in the middle of the copy?
Yeah, highlight a bunch, copy them over, then delete. Highlight a bunch, copy them over, then delete. Well,
got
for
it.
Some reason, the folder was clicked that I didn't realize, and away it went. Teach
now,
you to pay attention.
You didn't by any chance have, and anybody who has an Android phone should really have, Google Photos installed on there, did you?
You know, that's what's interesting. I talked to your call screener before I got on here, and she mentioned that. So I opened it up. I was going to install it while I was waiting to talk to you, and I find out that actually I do have that.
Oh!
It said open. So I opened it, but they're deleted there as well.
But you might, because you've been backing up, go to photos.google.com on the web and see if it had a chance to. These are older photos, right? They've been on your phone for a while?
Yeah, a long
time. Yeah, I would go to photos.google.com. I bet they're there. One of the things I like Google Photos will do, and it's a setting in Google Photos, is delete pictures once they've been backed up. You overrode that. You deleted them from the Samsung Gallery. Google Photos may have done that too. But Google Photos on the web should have it. And if it doesn't, look in the trash can. They have a deleted photos trash can. I think you're lucky. I believe Samsung actually includes Google Photos on its phones. If it doesn't, anybody who has an Android phone, install it. It's the best backup. Yeah, I'm thinking that maybe Samsung had already installed Google Photos because you don't remember installing it. The only issue would be maybe it's not wasn't ever set up to back up your photos. But try going to your Google account on the web, your Google Photos on the web, and see if they're there.
I'll do that. That's
yeah. Well, let's cross. And there is, if you go to your Google Photos app and you go to the hamburger menu, the three-line menu on the left, there is a trash can there, too. So photos that have been deleted stay there for 2 months. So you may even have them still on your phone. I do. I have a ton of deleted photos on my phone.
Yeah, I tried to find that on the phone. I couldn't. So I'm headed to my PC to see if I can get that way.
Yeah. Yeah. What? I mean, there may be ways to recover them on the phone media, but I wouldn't hold out a lot of hope. Look in the Google Photos and on the web, but also in Google Photos itself in the trash can. I don't remember if Samsung Photos, which is the default, the gallery, if that also has a trash can, but that would be worth checking as well. It doesn't look like it. Let's see. No, it doesn't. Any deletions there are immediate. But they should. You've got a copy, almost certainly.
Okay.
All right.
We'll go hunting for them. Thank you,
okay,
sir.
Okay, thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, I'm so sorry, Heather. Heather's still having trouble in Heather in Montana getting it working to play on the group. And you know what? It's probably us, Heather. I will. Well, not us, but it's probably some sort of thing that Amazon / TuneIn / Twit did. Some things can play on a phone. So, I mean, to play on the group. So I don't know why ours can't. But I will definitely have Patrick, our tech guy, look into it. He's the one who has the relationship with Amazon. And Missing says the CG Security makes a photo recovery tool. In fact, we'll put a link. I'll tell you what, we'll put a link to all of these tools. We're getting a number of them from the chat room that maybe can at least be worth a try. It's just the live. Yeah, it's the live thing. Yeah, podcasts work. It's the live thing. There's something strange happened to our live stream. Here you go, WikiHow. Thank you, Raymond J. Toth. Bunch of links there for doing this. Yeah, on Android, it's always running in the background, backing up. But I don't know how they've set the default on the Samsung phones. If they're on the SD card, that's a lot easier than if it's on the internal storage. And remember, as soon as you start doing stuff, it's gone. If it's on the SD card, if you've been saving photos to your SD card on your Note 5, pop out the SD card now, and you can run things, something like Recova on it. If it's in the internal storage, that's a little bit more tricksy. But you might be able to connect it to the computer and then scan it with something like EaseUS's MobiSaver for Android. This is, it says Android 5. We're up to 8 now. I don't know what 5 is. But why? Maybe. Why haven't they updated this? That's nerve. Well, you have a Note 5. Maybe you have a 5. I am using the Owl. I like the Owl still. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, chat room to the rescue with a number of programs for recovering lost photo data on Android phones. Of course, if you've been saving your photos to your SD card on your Note 5, that's a lot easier. Don't do anything on your phone now, because any time you write to the hard drive or the SD card, the internal drive of the SD card, you're potentially erasing those photos. Pop out that SD card, and you can run recovery tools against that SD card, programs like Recova, R-E-C-U-V-A. Because when you delete files on any file system, you don't actually delete the files. That'd be too time-consuming to actually overwrite or get rid of the data. All you do is you tell the file system, hey, this space is available for use. This space can be occupied. And if you don't occupy it, the data is still there. You just don't see it in the directory. It's been the entry in the directory has been modified. In Windows, they put a character that looks like a little upside down E for the first letter, and that tells the file system, nah, you can use this. We don't need whatever's there. So it's not been erased. It's just been deregistered in a way. And so recovery tools can go through that. They can look for those particular entries and say, no, this is not an upside down E. That should be a letter, and those magically show up. The names might be munged a little bit, but they'll magically show up. That's easier with an SD card, though, than doing it in the internal storage in a Note 5. But there are programs that will do that. We'll put a list of them on the show notes at techguylabs.com. It's also the fact that if it's in the internal storage, it's much more likely that data, that space got reused, because stuff's always getting written to the internal drive. Bogdan in Rosamond, California is next. Hello, Bogdan.
Hello, Leo. Thanks. Welcome. For taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I got a Mac-centric system at home, and I was just wondering, thinking about getting to the Home Assistant game, and I was wondering which one is the best. And I've heard things with the HomePod. It falls short for some of the others.
You know, it really depends what you're going to do. Amazon's Echo has been around for the longest, more than 3 years old, and it has the most what we call skills, that is third-party things that it can do. If you're playing music from Amazon, you know, you have an Amazon Music account or you've tied it to some other account, it really is probably the best for that. But it's not the best for asking facts. Google's assistant has a lot more experience in answering factual questions. So the Google Home may be a little bit better than, in fact, I know it's a little bit better. Both of them will do phone calls now. If you have an Echo ecosystem, like many Echoes, you can use Echoes to drop in on the other Echoes. We use our Echoes in the house as an intercom system. That's pretty cool. But Google's playing catch up. They've got a lot of new skills. They've really grown very quickly. They've only been out about a year, and they've grown very, very quickly with their skills. I think in the long run, because of Google's investment in artificial intelligence, they're probably going to be the better of the two. Now, remember, if you're shopping, Amazon's got easily, hands down, the best solution for shopping. I use the Amazon Echo all the time to buy stuff. Google does have a shopping solution, but it ties into Walmart and Target and some other vendors. It's a little more complicated, not quite as easy. But really, if you think about it, the Amazon Echo was created by Amazon to facilitate people buying stuff from Amazon, so it makes sense. It's kind of the king of the hill when it comes to shopping.
I know they have the home automation. I was wondering if that works well with the Apple HomeKit, so if I could use either my iPhone or the Echo to...
Yeah, HomeKit integration is brand new. Prior to that, if you hadn't said the word HomeKit, I would have said the Echo probably is the leader in home automation. But again, mostly because it's been around the longest. The HomeKit is going to be HomeKit integration is going to be, I think, challenging on both platforms because Apple kind of. It makes it hard, frankly, for third parties to work with HomeKit. But I think both of them will eventually work with HomeKit. Both of them have that capability. You know, I have Hue lights, those you know, internet-connected light bulbs from Philips. And both I can turn off my lights with either my Echo or my Google Home. And so one sometimes I'll turn it off with one, sometimes the other. It's hard to say one is better than the other. A lot of it depends on what you're going to do with it. I think... Google in the long run is going to win, mostly just because it's Google, at least in terms of intelligence.
Well, one of the things I also want to do is like play my downloaded songs I got from iTunes. Can I stream that to either speaker?
No.
No.
For that, you need Apple's HomePod.
Okay.
Unfortunately, with Apple, as is often the case, if you want to do Apple stuff, you need an Apple device. So you need an Apple TV or you need an Apple HomePod. That's kind of why they made the Apple HomePod.
So I can't even do a Bluetooth connection with one of the other speakers.
You can do Bluetooth, yeah. Yes, absolutely. So both of them can be Bluetooth speakers. And that actually is kind of handy. You can even use them as a phone if you want, as a speaker phone. So, yeah, no, if that's what you want to do, you can absolutely play it from your iPhone into the speakers. One of the advantages,
by the way,
yeah,
the mic is unmuted.
Yeah, I know it is.
Unmuted.
Okay,
press
no, I don't want to unmute it. Shh. One of the advantages that Echo has is you can get an Echo Dot that has a line out connection, you know, a headphone jack, so you can connect it to bigger speakers. The Home does not have that feature. It doesn't connect. It only connects via Bluetooth. It doesn't have a wired connection. So, I mean, I can go on and on with this list of... capabilities. They're pretty comparable, but there may be one or two features that make you think, oh, you know, if you wanted to connect it to big speakers, for instance, you might say, well, I need an Echo Dot because that's going to connect up to my nice speakers. I use my Dot that way.
Okay.
Yeah. If you have Sonos speakers, Echo works with Sonos, Google Home does not. So there's all these little, you know, gotchas. I have both. I think it's what may happen in this world. I think it'd be nutty, but I think it may happen in this world that people will have a number of virtual assistants, and you'll just talk to the one that does the thing you need to do most. But is it home automation that's most important to you?
Home automation, and then the personal assistant. I mean, I like to ask, play my music list.
Yeah. If you Google Home's really designed to work with Google Play Music, the Google Store, right? Okay. So if you can do the same thing you did with Apple, you can upload all your music to Google. I can't remember the limit, but it's 10 or 20 or 30,000 songs. It's a pretty high limit. Then have if you have Google Music, all of that will work just fine with Google Home.
All right, may I ask a quick question about the Epson EcoTank?
Oh, yeah.
I like the idea, you know, you do pay a little bit more up front, but you save a lot more money in the back end.
Exactly the idea, yeah.
And then, you know, but I've seen the advertising. They say, hey, you could do 100, 150 pages in a month.
Right.
I'm lucky if I do 50 to 75 a year.
That's a big problem. We've talked about this before. Inkjet printers really need to be used almost daily or they get clogged up. And so for very light duty, an inkjet is not a very good idea, frankly.
Then what would be a good idea?
Just get an inexpensive laser printer, $90 laser printer. Those never get clogged. You can have that, you know, sitting on the shelf and print once a year. It'll be fine. So I think for that, if you don't print a lot, inkjet is not a good choice in general. And the EcoTank, while it has lots of ink, doesn't really solve that problem particularly. But you don't have to print, you know, 5 pages a day. But if you print every day or every couple of days, those EcoTanks are great. But really, in general, all inkjet printers work best if you print every day or every other day. Laser printers, if you print once a week, twice a week, that would be my recommendation. Thanks to all of you for joining us. It's been a great day. Have a great Geek Week. We'll talk about Apple next week. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. See you next time. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.